Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Before we get into today's episode, I have a bunch of business to go through. Not that much business, but it's been a long, rough week, and if you're listening to this as it goes up, thank you so much for taking time out of your assuredly stressful lives right now to listen to the podcast and hopefully unwind and have a good time, which I know is going to happen because we have a good episode for y'all today. Great episode. But before we get into all that, I just want to run through some things. First of all, my guest Alejandra Arbona is from Puerto Rico, and because of that, I definitely want to direct every single listener to his Twitter page, twitter.com/AlejandroBot, where you can get a list of places that you can donate to help out with the relief efforts in Puerto Rico. Definitely check out the HispanicFederation.org and donate there. And then, of course, go to AlejandroBot on Twitter. His pinned tweet has a list of all places you can donate to, and I will be retweeting it on the Must Have Seen TV account at Must Have Seen TV. And then also repeating it again at the end of the show. On another note, we lost two people this week that are very important to me, and I just want to offer up viewing suggestions if you are looking to mourn or celebrate the lives of Monty Hall and Tom Petty. Monty Hall, the host of Let's Make a Deal, was a major part of my college experience. I obviously love old game shows, and watching Let's Make a Deal during the summer was a big deal for me. Monty Hall was my avatar on many a message board. I had a vintage Let's Make a Deal board game that was a decoration in my home in college. So if you want to, you can actually stream the Odd Couple episode that actually features Felix and Oscar going on Let's Make a Deal. That episode is, of course, called Let's Make a Deal, and it's in season 3. It's episode 20, and you can actually stream that on Hulu. We also lost Tom Petty this week, and I am actually very surprised at how upset I've been over it, because I didn't really discover his music until college or after. But specifically the songs Learning to Fly and I Won't Back Down mean a lot to me. And I've definitely gotten emotional on the subway listening to those songs. And I'm not sorry, other subway passengers. I have emotions. but if you want to, you can check out the Scrubs Season 3 premiere, which is on Hulu, and you can watch that there. You can also watch the series finale of The Larry Sanders Show, which actually features Tom Petty in it as an actor. You can stream that on HBO Go and HBO Now. And it has a really great dig at Greg Kinnear that I highly recommend you see. And then, of course, King of the Hill. Tom Petty voiced characters on King of the Hill as well. So, yeah, please donate to Puerto Rico. Please take time for yourself this week also to just deal with all of your stress, and I am very grateful that you have chosen this podcast to be a part of that stress. And if you're listening to this years in the future, hopefully there's still an Earth years in the future that you're listening to this on, and I hope things are a lot better, and I hope that you are having a great day. Yeah, so let's go on and get into this episode. It's a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with Alejandro, and I am excited for all of y'all to start running this holiday gauntlet right now.
Feel the calcified fingers of death wrap around your heart as you enter the must-have-seen-TV holiday gauntlet, Halloween! This is the audio tome dedicated to droll tales of yesteryear, from the Addams Family to the new Addams Family. I'm your TV guiding spirit, Brett White, and running the holiday gauntlet this week is comic book editor Alejandro Albona. Welcome. How's it going?
Good, thank you. That was my Thriller laugh.
Yes. This is a theatrical. Welcome to the very first episode of Holiday Gauntlet.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited
to run this Holiday Gauntlet with me. So listeners, if you don't know what the Holiday Gauntlet is, because I haven't been talking about it enough, we're doing four episodes about Halloween in October, followed by three episodes about Thanksgiving in November, and then a week off. And then four episodes about Christmas, last week of November and the first 3 weeks of December. I'm very excited because sitcoms are all about holiday episodes. That's what I love about them. We're getting into Halloween today. I wanted to ask, what is your history with Halloween?
I grew up in Puerto Rico, which is going through some very rough times right now.
God, so yeah, please... I'm so sorry.
Please look at my Twitter for information on how to donate. No, we'll get into that later. But I grew up in Puerto Rico, and it was always a very exciting holiday there, much as it is here. Kids trick-or-treating, there was all of that. So it was always a lot of fun to dress up in costumes and go trick-or-treating and go to Halloween parties.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of my Halloween costume. Fourth grade at school, we had a Halloween costume contest, and I had this really gnarly headless man costume that my mom helped me make.
Oh, make!
And I won. Yeah, make.
Oh, that's good.
And we won best costume. I say we because she really did most of the work. I conceptualized and she designed.
So as a kid, were you more of a like store-bought or always making your shit?
I think mostly making, because in hindsight, most of the costumes I've loved to wear have been actually like characters from things that I like, especially in adulthood.
Yeah.
Characters from TV and movies and cartoons. But even in childhood, like... when I look back at family Halloween pictures, most of my costumes were like a lion, which was, I think, a homemade costume 1 year, or like Peter Pan 1 year. And then once I got into, you know, once I sort of came into my own, then it was like...
Once you start funding, once you start bankrolling it yourself.
Yeah, then it was like, I think fourth grade was that was the first year that I actually had my own costume idea, which was I want to be a gnarly headless man.
Yeah.
And we went all out. We
knocked that out.
We had a severed head that was dripping blood, and a shirt that I wore over my head that my mom sort of made eye holes in with like white pantyhose so I could see through it.
Oh, nice.
It was awesome.
Wow. Yeah, I was always a homemade Halloween costume person because my mom is a crafty sewer type person. So we would always go, I remember we would go to Walmart. And they had, like, the big crafting sections in Walmart. And so I would sit at the stool that was in the crafting section. And I would go through the big book of all the costumes and pick out the one I wanted and stuff. The one that I was the biggest headache was, I guess, in 1989, I wanted to be Batman. Because Batman had just come out.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to be Batman 66. Because what I already loved was that. And so I thought that the movie Batman was like an aberration. I was like, well, that was a good movie, but why is he in all black? Batman is blue and gray.
Clearly this dark Batman trend will not last.
Yeah, no, not important. And so I remember my mom begging me, like, because she could not find the right shades of blue and gray. And her being like, Batman wears all black. Why can't you just... I was like, no! Mine is blue and gray. And
she's like, I've already vacuum molded this hard plastic costume for you.
But I think the pattern that we found was a Batman 66 pattern. Like it wasn't plastic molding or nothing. So, although I don't, they still don't make that kind of shit for kids, right? Big plastic costumes, big rubber bodies
with
nipples.
With bat nipples.
Oh, gross. and you're still into Halloween now as an adult.
Very much, yeah. And I try to, like I said before, I try to always make my own costumes and I try to always make them characters from things that I like. For example, last year I had a costume I was really proud of and I didn't really get to show it off anywhere, so I might recycle it this year.
Wait, what was it last year?
It was Guy Incognito from The Simpsons.
Ah.
I was wearing a tuxedo and a red tie and a top hat and I had a mustache.
Man.
And it was my exact double.
That is the weird thing about being an adult is not having a place to wear the costumes to.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I first moved to New York, I was heavily involved with UCB, and so the Upright Citizens Brigade would have Halloween parties every year, and so that was like cool. Like
I know where I'm going, this is good. But then they stopped being able to have parties at the theater. This is now probably 8 years ago. This is now a long time ago, I guess. Ugh. So now every Halloween, it's like, where am I going? I'm going to be going all out on this costume. Where am I going to wear it to?
That reminds me, it's funny, we were just talking about this off mic, but that a year ago today was, thanks to Facebook memories, I know that a year ago today was the day that I thought back to the year, I think, 2009?
Yes.
2009. I got to go to a UCB party with, there were a couple of years that I was hanging out a lot with Jesse Falcon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we spent two or three Halloweens together, and he brought me out to the UCB Halloween parties. And the first one I went to, I was dressed as Joel from Mystery Science Theater 3000. And I met someone who was dressed as Banshee in this homemade Banshee costume.
From
and I was
X-Men.
Like, yeah. And I was like, that costume is awesome. Can I take a picture? And this person struck a dramatic pose.
Yeah. Who knows how many details I was at that point.
So I took that picture, and then last year, a year ago today, thanks to Facebook, I was just sitting around the house, and I remembered that costume, and I thought, my God, that person was Brett White. Like, I realized it then, but at that time, I didn't know you yet, and I don't think we met. We didn't meet for maybe a couple years after that.
Yeah.
But then as soon as I remembered that costume and I remembered the face of the person, I was like, that was Brett. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then I dug through my pictures and I found it, and it was totally you.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I think it's still a crowning achievement of my Halloween costumes. Well, I don't know how to sew, so it's always, for a while, it was what superhero has really color-blocked, like, bodysuits that I can just buy pieces of and assemble.
Mm-hmm. Big disco collar.
Yeah, I bought a polo shirt, I bought a yellow polo shirt and cut it in the V, and then I Velcroed it to the, like, low-cut, I guess, unitard or whatever. Because Banshee has it's open so you can see his chest hair, because it's a very 70s costume, so I was like, well, I have to get a unitard that, like, comes down. And then that cape was a pain to make because it was like yellow fabric. I got black duct tape and like made the stripes. Then I had to run Velcro. I had to get my friend Nicole Drespel to sew Velcro strips to it so I could Velcro the cape. It was a lot.
My God.
But it was worth it. It was a great costume. So like this is the context that we are coming at.
Oh yeah.
Halloween in.
The year after that I went to the UCB party again, and this time I was the moon from the Mighty Boosh.
Oh yeah.
And I had this homemade moon head that completely concealed my features. So at the end of the night when we were all gonna go home, I ripped the whole moon head off. And then I started talking to people that I had been hanging out with all night, and they didn't recognize me. They were like, why did this guy just suddenly come walk into our group?
Don't be so
and
familiar.
I was like, no, it's me. It's Alejandro. This is like, I remember Jesse's, I think then girlfriend, who is now his wife, and they have two kids together.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
She was like, hello. And I was like, it's me, Alejandro. And she was like, oh my God, you took the head off. I didn't recognize you. And I was like, I'm wearing head to toe white. I'm wearing a white suit with a white shirt and white shoes.
Yeah. It's not, the face is not the only thing here. This week on Must Have Seen TV, we are traveling to October 30th, 1996. Appropriately, Dracula Dead and Loving It rolled the box office.
Wow.
Not as appropriately, The Macarena, the Bayside Boys remix by Los Del Rio, topped the charts. And NBC aired the news radio episode Halloween. Alejandro, you must have seen Halloween before.
I saw it the night it aired.
Yeah.
And I've seen it a few times since when I've done a news radio rewatch a couple of times. And I watched it yesterday, and I watched it today.
It's still good after all these times. What is your history with news radio? Were you a fan from episode one?
Yes. Well, oh, I was a huge Kids in the Hall fan before that, even.
Mm.
So after Kids in the Hall, if I remember correctly, Kids in the Hall ended and news radio started the very following year.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think it started in 94, early 95, I think.
Right around then, yeah.
Or something like that.
It's literally within the same year or one or like back-to-back years. So as soon as, I mean, that was the time of, I was a teenager. I was watching a lot of TV to begin with. I used to watch all must-see TV.
Yeah.
You know, all those shows. So definitely I've put in my hours watching Just Shoot Me and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Suddenly Susan,
yeah.
Like a Truth.
Yeah, and Caroline something. In the City and everything. But
yeah, Single Guy, oh, so good.
No. But so News Radio came along, and I was excited to watch it. Number one, because it had Dave Foley in it, who I loved from The Kids in the Hall. Number two, it had Phil Hartman in it, and that was amazing. And then number three, I was just going to watch it anyway, because I watched all those NBC shows.
Yeah. And did you stick with it throughout all 5 seasons?
I actually stopped watching it in part because of, you know, personal anguish. I stopped watching it when Phil Hartman died.
Yeah, the last season.
And I don't think I ever watched the episode that Bill McNeil dies in.
Yeah, that's a...
And I've never watched anything after that. Even to this day, I've still never watched
it. Doing a rewatch, because I remember I watched it when it aired, because I love News Radio as it aired. I probably covered this in our previous News Radio episode. I don't know. With Curtis Rutherford. Go back and listen to that one. But I love News Radio. I remember where I was when I found out that he had been killed. And I watched that last season. At the time, I remember it being like awful. I hated it. Like, John Lovett's bad. This is horrible. I've done like 2 rewatches since then, and both times I've rewatched season 5, it has been like less bad than I remember. Hmm. There are some good moments in it. It's a fine season. It is missing a big part. The show feels empty is the problem, because it's both you're missing Candy Alexander and also Phil Hartman.
Mm-hmm.
So it does feel you don't get the camaraderie that is so essential to News Radio.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this week we are going back and doing News Radio for a second time. It's my first ever repeat show, but worth it for the holiday gauntlet. This week on Must Have Seen TV, we're talking about the News Radio episode Halloween. It is the 5th or 7th episode of season 3, depending on if you go by production order or air date order. It was written by Sam Johnson and Chris Marcel and directed by Tom Sharones. Here is how Amazon describes the episode. It is up to Lisa and Dave to get the staff primed to attend Jimmy's annual Halloween party. Alejandro, how accurate is that description?
I think that's pretty accurate. That's basically all that happens. There are subplots, but they all operate within the orbit of that thing happening.
Yeah.
People don't go off in their separate directions.
It is pretty much a straightforward episode.
And then they attend the party for the back half of the episode.
Yeah, that's about it. The cold open is all of them, again, around that table doing vague office-y stuff.
Timesheets.
Yeah. Okay, now I talked to the people in payroll, and they said if you get your timesheets in on Tuesday, that they can get your paycheck.
And every time that he pops up throughout the rest of the episode and he's looking at a clipboard, I'm assuming he's looking at timesheets.
Yeah, he's still trying to get those timesheets in on Wednesdays.
Yeah. But their meeting is interrupted because all these like more and more outlandish characters keep walking by to like find Jimmy. And it's like a snake delivery guy. Then a guy with a chainsaw and bowling pins, assuming a juggling act. And then a mime that is played by News Radio executive producer Joe Fury, I do believe.
Really?
Yes. Huh. He also is the guy that did the One Man News Radio shorts that are they're bonus features on all the DVDs.
I've never seen those.
So like they're really funny because they're shot on like a VHS camcorder. I think it's like after a Friday night taping. He would stay around me with one other person running the camera and then just reenact a condensed 5-minute episode of News Radio with him playing all the parts, just wearing a sweatshirt and jeans. Or if it's Beth, he would like roll up the sweatshirt so you could see his stomach.
Of course.
So he is the mime in this.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, because what would a Halloween party be without a snake and a mime and a psychic?
And a chainsaw and a juggling act. That's a Jimmy James party, definitely.
Definitely.
And then the psychic comes. There's also a psychic. There are basically 2 subplots in this episode.
Well, I tracked them as the A plot is them getting to go to this Halloween party and Dave rallying Lisa
like threw Dave sort of.
Well, Dave and Lisa having their usual power, kind of power struggle, management leadership struggle. And then the subplots, I would say maybe the conflict between Dave and Lisa, which is ostensibly over leadership, which at the end is revealed to be about Lisa being jealous that Dave looks better in her dress.
Yeah.
And that's one subplot.
Yeah,
Bill McNeil has a subplot about knowing exactly when he's going to die because the psychic tells him that he will die at the age of 82.
March 8th, 2032, at 4:20 p.m. you will die.
You see?
Yeah, which, I mean, now in retrospect, we know that psychic was full of shit and it seems horrible to like...
Yeah, Bill McNeil canonically died much younger than that.
Which is a weird... It's just weird. It makes that joke very weird in retrospect. This whole plot, very weird in retrospect.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I have a deep take on that.
Oh, but
it's,
yeah.
It possibly takes this discussion in a whole different direction that it might be too early in the episode to take off on a weird tangent.
I'm all for tangents. People know what's in this episode. Psh.
I just find it so funny about that subplot that Bill is so gullible. What I find interesting about him is that he's credulous, you know, and like he's gullible, but he's also arrogant.
Yeah.
So he thinks he's smarter than everyone, but he will believe anything if it makes him think that he's smarter than other people.
So
he allows himself to be the guy who speaks up and says, actually, she's a leading authority in the field of psychicismology or whatever.
Yeah.
And like that alone, and like, you know, he's being contrarian. And yeah. I don't know if he really believes this stuff.
When he can't go back on it. Once he says like, well, I believe she's a, you know, a leading psych, whatever. And then she gives him that reading. He can't all of a sudden be like, well, she is full of crap. I actually don't know anything. I was lying. Like,
or even if this troubles him or not, I think he painted himself into a corner where he likes having knowledge that no other person alive has, which is the knowledge of when they will die. So I think that kind of gives him a thrill. And I think he likes knowing something that other people don't know, because that's the kind of person Bill is.
Yeah.
But then it also allows him to panic over it. Then again, he feels sorry about himself, and maybe he's just doing that for attention, because he tries to get Dave to bring him coffee.
Yeah, he has such a great... I love his performance in this episode. Like, they have this big, like, meeting in the break room, where Lisa's, like, rallying all of them to finally, like, go wear costumes, and they all leave, and Bill doesn't go, and then Dave's like, what are you doing?
He's not going to rush out and get a costume, Bill?
Oh, maybe you didn't hear. I'm terminal.
I'm terminal.
And he's like, I only have 36 more years to live.
Yeah, because he's going to die at age 82, probably of old age.
Yeah. So I love that. And I love him getting, finding an old woman to, like, be with.
Yeah, and his costume, the only costume they don't really identify by name, but it's sort of a officer of the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, he's just a Revolutionary War guy.
The idea that kept occurring to me is that maybe he's dressed as Alexander Hamilton, who's notably the only founding father who kind of died before his time.
Yeah,
Young. So I think maybe he's fixated on this idea of dying.
And that's also, like, you know, way before Hamilton Mania. So, again, knowing something that no one else knows at the time.
Sure. These costumes are going to be really popular one day.
And I will bring it up now, as I did in the previous News Radio episode, that Phil Hartman is so fucking handsome. I have always had a huge crush on him. I think he's so handsome in this episode.
He carries off that military uniform.
That's specifically it. Is like him in that fucking military, that Alexander Hamilton Revolutionary War, those like knee-high boots.
And the tails like pinned up in the back.
Like when he calls for the DJ to play.
Maestro, if you please, Rump Shaker or some reasonable facsimile.
And then he, like, busts a move for, like, literally a millisecond before they smash cut to all the women, like, dragging him back into the office to talk sense to him. He is so foxy? That's what this podcast is all about. And if you aren't comfortable with it, why are you listening?
And, you know, I think News Radio, it certainly is one of my very favorite shows of all time, and it has some of the most quotable lines of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And many of them are Bill's. For example, one of my favorites is, I stand still, Dave, the conclusions jump to me.
Yeah.
but this is one of their all-time top, you know, Maestro, if you please, Rump Shaker.
Or reasonable effects. Because they can't afford the rights to Rump Shaker.
Of course, it's
also
a joke. That's
such a cool, like, breaking of the fourth wall right there.
Yep.
Also, just, that's so fucking good. I want to talk about the thing that kickstarts the whole plot is that the party's coming up. All the staff is like, yeah, last year's party was great. Open bar, buffet, helicopter rides.
Yeah.
All super excited about it. But then Jimmy James is like, well, none of you are...
It's not about money. See, every year I throw a wild Halloween party, right? And every year the staff from WNYX nearly ruins it for me.
Well, how exactly do they do that?
Well, they don't get into the Halloween spirit. They're too hip to wear costumes or bob for apples or do my special spooky version of the Hokey Pokey.
So, well, the costumes that they wore last year, Joe walked around on his tiptoes and went as Joe's taller brother. Bill didn't wear socks and went as Guy Without Socks. So that brings me to my point of, we're not these people, right? Like, we aren't the kind of...
Oh, certainly not.
Yeah. And when I... This is a recurring theme of Halloween sitcom episodes is the party pooper that is reluctant to wear a costume.
I once went to work at my job in the daytime as a Ghostbuster.
Yeah.
That is how much I love Halloween.
Yes. We both worked at Wizard Magazine mm-hmm. at different times. So when I was there on Halloween, I won the office costume contest.
Oh, wow.
That was my year I was a new mutant.
A generic new mutant?
Yeah, I was myself as a new mutant. So I wore the black bodysuit with the yellow shorts and the yellow stripe.
That's incredible.
And the red belt. And then I made buccaneer boots by buying yellow socks and then... The t-shirt that I cut to make the chest stripe, I used those sleeves and turned them into the fold-over things for the buccaneer boots.
That's incredible.
So yeah, and it was everyone. I won.
It was a very personal costume. Yeah. Because it was you.
It was
last year when I was Guy Incognito, I still wore glasses, you know, because I wear glasses.
Yeah.
And somebody pointed out to me, Guy Incognito doesn't wear glasses, and I said, no, this is my Guy Incognito. He's my exact double.
Yeah.
He's not Homer's exact double.
Yeah. See. It's low high concept.
Yep,
it's just a little bit higher than low. But that's all these characters are cool kids. Like they get into this conversation.
Okay, all right. This is just like high school. All right, in high school we all like sitting at the cool table in the cafeteria, right?
That's right.
Wait a minute. Everybody here got to sit at the cool table. What was that like?
It was cool.
Except Matt, which reminds me, that's when we were talking about subplots earlier, that is another subplot, although really it's like a micro plot.
Yeah, it's
which
like a
is
callback
that,
joke.
That last year he was a motorcycle enthusiast
yeah.
who won third prize for his costume, quote unquote, gay biker.
Yeah.
And this year he dresses as a construction worker.
Alien autopsy coroner. Little devil. Oh, pretty ballerina. Queen of England. Gay construction worker.
And so that's sort of the arc of his journey in this episode. And then at the end, he's jokingly almost awarded gayest costume.
So we can talk about that for a hot second. How well does that age? Or am I being one of those?
I think there's definitely
pick your battles kind of things.
No, I think there's definitely stuff there that you can dissect.
Yeah.
I think the. Personally, I think it's okay, but this is personal opinion only. But for example, the reasons I think it's okay are when Matthew gets quote unquote awarded gayest costume, he's miffed, you know,
he's a construction worker.
I don't know where I was going with that point actually.
I think it's a really interesting time capsule of what was liberal in 1996 and what is now liberal now. Because I think, back then, that's a liberal. The fact that they're even, mentioning gay characters is in its own weird way progressive and inclusive for the mid-90s.
I was going to make some very subtle distinction with that example, and I completely lost the thread, and now I can't remember what it was. But there are other things that I would call out, which were also that, with the cross-dressing theme. Of course, we haven't brought up at all that Dave's costume is that he dresses as a woman.
Right.
Which at the time, for me, was remarkable because it was such a wonderful callback to Kids in the Hall.
Exactly.
When Dave Foley and all the others would all dress
as women.
They
did every episode.
Which was amazing.
All the time.
And then the running joke here becomes, and rightly so, how good Dave Foley looks dressed as a woman.
Yeah, because he was easily the hottest kid in the hall in drag.
Yep. Yep.
And I made a note, his legs are really good.
Which Jimmy James remarks on.
Boy, Dave, I never realized you had such long, slender legs. Okay, let's go on, everybody.
There's a scene where him and Lisa are sitting on the couch, and he's folded his legs, he's crossed his legs, and he's wearing, a mini skirt. And you can basically, see all of his thigh, and it's mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But there are a couple of jokes in there that I thought were, they were sort of... They were sort of towing the line of wincing, but at the same time, not really. Like when he shows up, first of all, Catherine loves it. Catherine says, "You look fabulous."
Yeah,
which is true.
Yeah,
and then Joe right away is like,
"Dude, if you ever want to work some parties, I know a guy I could hook you up."
Thanks, no.
But he says that so discreetly, so free of judgment.
Yeah, dude, if you ever want to work some parties, I know a guy to hook you up.
And he's talking about people he knows. There's also another episode where Joe talks about having a gay friend who's who
Oh, yeah, they go to the movie together. But he's also, like, afraid people are going to think they're together.
Yeah.
But he still, has a gay friend.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a little bit of gay panic, but like, Joe's a cool guy.
Yeah.
Joe...
There's the moment with the mime. Like, the mime sits down to hit on Dave, and Dave is going to be like,
Sorry, sitting here, and,
I'm a guy.
I'm a mime.
Which reminds me of, what's that movie with Jack Lemmon...
Some Like It Hot?
Yeah, where they dress as women.
Yes.
The famously, the final line of that movie is, I'm a man, nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
The man who wants to marry Jack Lemmon.
Yeah.
Jack Lemmon says, I'm a man, and he says, nobody's perfect.
I honestly thought nobody's perfect was going to be the mime's reaction in this.
Me too.
That was in my head.
Yeah.
It's so, like, in just the water that we drink of pop culture. And then there's also a moment where what Lisa says that Dave like looks so much better in that dress, like he looks like a million bucks, and he says,
I have never been able to wear that dress because I just couldn't pull it off, and now you just look like a million bucks.
No, I look like a man in a dress, which is worth at the most $150 on 9th Avenue.
Again, like, it's the thing of, you know, this is a liberal left-leaning progressive show for 1996, also for now.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you know that the context that they're making all these jokes in is not, like, malicious. Like, you know, like, news radio can make a gayest costume joke, and I'm not afraid that this is a show that hates me.
Well,
like,
they also don't award gayest costume to the man who's dressed as a woman.
Right.
Like, that alone is already, like, when they first mentioned that, when Bill first calls out that category, I thought, oh, is this going to be, like... cross-dressing, gay panic kind of thing.
Yeah, cross-dressing equals gay, but no, gay men wanting women.
It's just a Matthew joke. It's just like the culmination of Matthew's little arc.
Yeah. The thing, like, and to put this in really recent context, the fucking Netflix Punisher trailer dropped. And that, to me, like, that's actually dangerous. Like, that trailer doesn't have anything to do with gay people, but as a gay man, that trailer is just the trailer form of the men that I'm terrified of when I drive across country and... like, go to a gas station.
Sure.
Because that trailer is just fucking male panic, violence, Metallica, unrelenting masculinity, women getting murdered. And it's just like this, it's so aggressive that it is upsetting.
Well, Punisher is a very easy character to get very wrong.
Yeah. Yep. To do that with.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping the show is different than the trailer.
Yeah.
Because I will have to watch it for work, and I don't want it to sit through 13 hours of that trailer.
Yeah. I really liked how they portrayed the Punisher on Daredevil.
I love
it. I'm hoping I hope they strike the same note and it's more of that.
So, like, but when I watched, so, like, all these jokes on news radio, I take in the context of it's just, like, the time. And it's all... it's fine. Like, when Lisa and Dave kiss, and Jimmy James walks up and be like, hey, and Dave's dressed as a woman. He's like, hey.
Whoa, 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 what is this? Yelling DeGeneres show?
A very topical joke.
Super topical. She wasn't out
yet. Gets the biggest laugh from the studio audience.
She was not out yet.
Oh.
Because because she came out in the spring of 97, so this is the same TV season where they spent a whole season... everyone knew it was going to happen. They didn't know when.
Wow.
And so that season of Ellen, they spent all that season leading up to it, like hinting at it. And there were a lot of just like, Ellen's in the closet looking for a outfit. Like, you know, those kind of like winky jokes. So that was just like, again, in the zeitgeist. And so him making that joke, the audience was like, yeah, we've heard that on Access Hollywood Entertainment Tonight. We know that.
Well, I think for an episode where the word gay is used so much, I don't really, my red flag is never raised that they're belittling anybody.
Yeah. It's just like an artifact of the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
And in a great show. In a fucking great show.
I mean, you could put those jokes in a sitcom today, and I'm sure it would probably get a lot of little clickbait think pieces written about it.
Yeah,
But it would, the jokes would be as, they would still toe the same line. They would be as funny.
And it's all like, again, what show does them? Like, if an ABC multicam red states, like, if Last Man Standing makes those jokes, that show doesn't like me. That show doesn't, that Tim Allen show doesn't want me watching it. And if it makes those jokes, which it probably has made in its long run. It was on for, like, 5 or 6 years. And I didn't watch it, so I don't know if it made those jokes. But anyway, it's getting way off on important shit that I just wanted to get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So we can get back to the fun shit of... the cool kids at the cool kids table. Mm. I wanted to bring up, Beth doesn't do much in this episode, but if I'm talking about news radio, I gotta talk about Beth. A I fucking love Vicki Lewis.
She her getting a psychic reading is like the beginning and end of her subplot.
Yeah. But she, everything she gets is such a thing. Mm-hmm. And I love, like, when she gets that fortune, or her fortune read, her, like, her face, like, why you,
I see an astounding rise to fortune. It'll begin very soon.
Oh, my God.
Is that true?
Yes, it is completely true, because I was just pre-approved for a new credit card. Oh, my God.
Even the way that, when they're all hanging out in the break room and Lisa says, let's take our coolness, like, to the next level, just the look on Beth's face. She's not the focus of the scene. I don't even think she has the next line. Mm-hmm. But just, she's sitting on that back counter eating a Twizzler, and, like, the way her, you can see her, like, Beth, like, registers, like, what, the next level of cool. Her, like, eyes
get
big.
Her gears are spinning.
Yeah, like, it's so, to see, you can look at, and this is true for most of the actors on the show, you can look at them at any time. You can see the gears in their characters' heads whirring.
Except for Catherine, who they largely leave off camera.
Yeah, so frustrating.
She has a really funny punchline in one scene, yeah. and it's off camera. They didn't even cut to her while she delivered her great line.
Yeah, and so it's upsetting.
Her refusing to wear a costume.
Yeah.
That's actually one thing that troubles me in this episode, is in the scene in the break room when they say, who's the coolest of all of us or whatever, and everyone immediately, unanimously says Beth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, arguably you could also say Catherine.
I could see either of them.
And then in the dorks chanting scene in the elevator.
Dorks, 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 dorks,
I looked at each of the performers, especially when the elevator doors opened up again, yes. And they were still clapping and chanting, yes. Dorks, and they each seemed like they belonged and they would be into it, except Catherine, who was just sort of, she was like smiling and playing it perfectly right, but yeah. It didn't really suit her character.
Yeah, that's not her character game. Is not.
She's making an expression where she's looking dumb.
Yeah.
And she's clapping her hands and she's chanting dorks. And I'm like, that's never Catherine.
No. But that moment is so good.
Oh, yeah.
I think I have a gif of that. I love that dorks, 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 yep. Just chanting. And then Dave and Jimmy have a nice, decent sized conversation.
Uh-huh.
About, like, Jimmy's like, what costume are you going to wear?
It's going to be wild.
Oh, the wildest.
It's outrageous.
Totally outrageous, yeah.
What is it?
I love excitable baby voice Steve.
Oh, yeah, and when he's talking to when he's miming with the mime.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, gaping, like, mouth open the whole time, and he's, like, tapping his watch and pouring an invisible mug of coffee over his head. And the whole time he has this huge open mouth smile.
Yeah. He's so good. I wanted to point out that Beth is also dressed like a low-key Morticia.
Huh.
Because she's wearing, like, this really, like, drapey, black, fishnetty looking thing. I think mm-hmm. she might have, like, black fingernail polish. I'm like, subtle Halloween wear.
Hmm.
Beth, you know, I can see Beth as a seasonally appropriate dresser.
Sure.
Overall, what would you say what worked about this episode? That's, like, everything?
Well, I think if you reduce this to just one phrase or one nutshell, it's Dave Foley cross-dressing, which is
classic.
I mean, Kids in the Hall, you know, that's I remember when this episode first aired, the thing about this very episode that I was most excited about was that it felt like this is this guy that I know so well from the Kids in the Hall doing this thing again, and I love it. I love it so much, you know.
And then
I love how it pays off. I love that he looks good doing it, and everyone compliments him, and a bear puts his puts his paw on his ass,
yeah.
And a mime hits on him,
and
Jimmy James is driven to distraction by his long slender legs.
And it makes Lisa has like a sub plot of like body issues.
That's in a way that's kind of her other subplot, but it doesn't have any resolution.
No, yeah, she's not comfortable. She doesn't want to wear a costume because it makes her look chunky, or it makes her legs, or make her head look weird, or. Well, then why don't you just wear what you're wearing now and a mask? It's like, no, what I'm wearing now is horrible.
Yeah.
And then she gets super... But that's also
But it pays off well because that seems like it's just a one-off gag. And then she gets very upset that Dave is wearing her dress.
It's
and then
the setup for that.
That plays out for a couple of scenes. And then Dave, when they're going to finally have a discussion about it, Dave sort of preempts her and he says, look, I get it. You wanted to do this leadership by example thing, and you're just upset because I one-upped you.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, you look better than me.
Yeah, that's it. It's such a great misdirect. And I think this might have been the first time I really noticed that those two things are connected. Like, mm-hmm. when she's having that rant up top, that is a foreshadowing to what she gets mad about in the party, which could seem like it comes kind of out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not really paying attention and remember, oh no, she was super upset about...
They did set it up.
Yeah.
And they also, when she gets upset the first time, Dave and Jimmy James kind of roll their eyes at each other and they say she's crazy.
Yeah.
They're like, she's crazy. Yeah, they roll their eyes. And then when Dave and Lisa have that resolution, Dave says, I'll take off the dress. And she says, no, don't do it because then everyone will know that I got mad because I'm crazy and blah, blah, blah. And so that pays off too.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, you know, maybe that's a little troubling as well.
Yeah, man, that doesn't age as well. But again, they meant well. I mean, like, what is, okay, everyone at the costume party wears. We haven't run through everyone's costumes. Jimmy James is one of the dead guys from Field of Dreams.
Yeah, I would have pegged him as an old time Yankee or Babe Ruth. He's wearing just a kind of gray, non pinstriped baseball uniform.
But he gets way more specific.
Yeah, and he says, one of those dead guys from Field of Dreams.
Good joke. That's a really good zigzag zog, as he says in this episode as well. Then Joe is one of those UFO alien autopsy doctors.
He's just wearing like a doctor's coat and the mirror reflective thing on his forehead. But alien autopsy coroner.
Yeah. And then Lisa is a lil devil, as Jimmy James says.
Which she later drops a trident and sheds the horns and she's just wearing a red sweater.
Yeah,
for the rest of the episode.
Looking like normal. She'd go to work in that. And then Beth is a ballerina.
Yeah, pretty ballerina.
Which I feel is
she,
that
she
on...
puts her she gets on tiptoes and puts her hands up above her head to help Jimmy James identify
is
the
that,
idea
is that does that fit with her
well I think it when you were talking earlier about how she dressed, I thought it's funny in light of that she dresses as a ballerina because it's sort of flying in the face of her style.
Yeah,
it's unlike her style.
I guess you could see, because like on a normal day is Halloween for her, she wears insane stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She shreds the dress code. She's never even, like, she doesn't know that there is a dress code. Mm-hmm. She doesn't care. But also, dress codes are usually sexist towards women, so maybe she should give it the middle finger and do whatever mm-hmm. she wants, because mm-hmm. it's her body. And she's not in control of what men think. Men need to learn how to control themselves. Beth forever.
Very true.
But it's weird that she's a ballerina.
Well, all the costumes they're wearing are, like, they literally went to the costume store that day.
Yeah, or, like, their own, because isn't... Catherine is just Queen of England, and she's, I think, just wearing...
She's wearing a tiara and
what
gloves.
What she was normally wearing, but tiara and gloves, and maybe right. she wore, like, a scepter or a sash.
Yeah, she has a scepter, I think.
So, like, yeah, she got some accessories.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew is gay construction worker.
But these are, like, the costume versions of when a sitcom would have a can of beer that said beer on the front.
Right, yeah.
You know, like...
You can't do anything that's actually... You can never... That's the one...
They're all store-bought costumes, and they're not even, like, a knockoff Beetlejuice costume.
Yeah.
They're just generic profession costumes.
Well, it's like... And in The Office, when they do Halloween episodes, there's one where, like, Dwight is a Sith Lord... But he has to have just, like, a black robe and a hood and just, like, a generic... I don't even know if it's a red lightsaber. It might just be, like, a generic, like, laser. That's the weird thing about copyright and shit, is mm-hmm. you can't... These shows actually can't do super accurate Halloween costumes sometimes.
Because
mm-hmm. of copyright stuff. Because I feel like, Beth would probably be... I don't know. Okay. Betty Page?
Yeah.
Cyndi Lauper?
I think she'd be, like... She'd show up wearing something really trashy, and she'd be like, oh, I'm a sex worker who was murdered.
Yeah, I can see her doing that. But I guess she does, like, the way that Jimmy James dotes on her is very, like, she is, like, his little girl in mm-hmm. a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So she does, in a weird way, Beth is the little, she is sometimes the little sister, the innocent of the show, in a weird way.
That's a good point.
Only when they need her to be, because she's also very aggressive and... sexual and weird, so
mm-hmm. but that
multifaceted,
you know, not that those things are mutually exclusive,
right? Yeah, she's just kind of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So what doesn't work about this episode? Loaded question.
I feel like a lot of news radio episodes, they don't necessarily give Catherine a lot to do, which is sad.
It's now a running theme that we've now mentioned twice in this podcast, is not giving her enough.
And Candy Alexander is such a talented performer, and she was so funny, so great at deadpan.
Yeah.
And sometimes she has real moments to shine throughout the show, but most of the time it's just, she's quiet, she's mad.
Yeah.
And it's not like... she's in the background.
I mean, I guess, like, this is a larger cast. It's a cast of eight. So it is, like, a larger cast, but I mean, like...
you can't keep people stuff to do every episode.
Cheers had a cast of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 7 to 9, usually, so... Mm-hmm. It's... They never got into a rotation. Like, there are certain characters that never got, like, an off episode. Like, Bill, Dave, and Lisa never get off episodes. They're always in the A plot, or A or B... And then everyone
and
else...
And it's easy, I'm sure for the writers, it's easy to write jokes for Matthew. It's easy to write jokes for Beth. Catherine is a more understated character, maybe.
Yeah, and that also... But I mean, like, even we figured out in the last podcast, like, well, her character game is that she's intense, she's very high status, anything you can do to, like, undermine... And in this episode, when she's like, not on your life will I wear a costume, mm-hmm. it's a funny line, so put the camera on her.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they're probably doing that, like, live cutting from camera to camera, they didn't get a good one that take.
Yeah.
And they just well, we'll live with it. Yeah. You know, they just sort of went with it.
And this isn't anything that, like, those writers knew that. I mean, like, this isn't like we're calling them out or anything. Yeah, like, they were totally, like, they was hard.
It's also
balance.
I think she has a great character, but it's a character that only really comes into contrast in conflict with other characters,
right.
Maybe. So she has a lot of great scenes in other episodes arguing with Bill,
mm-hmm.
or trying to negotiate with Dave, or, you know, work type stuff. But it only comes out in dialogue scenes where there has to be more focus on her.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Matthew could pop into the background of any scene and say something and become a punchline.
This episode has one of the season 3 tradition of every cold open ending with a dumb Matthew physical gag.
Which he does so well. Which jumping up on the...
There's a snake that is loose and they don't know it. And he keeps saying, like, stop tickling my leg. And Beth's like, I'm not tickling your leg. She gets up. And then, okay, well, we're gonna go, and everyone gets up, or whatever. Or no, the guy comes back, and he's like, has anyone seen my steak? Everyone bolts back, he looks down, and then jumps and, like, leaps onto the table, and just, which is covered in papers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're in the middle of a meeting, and it's, and then it smash cuts to the opening credits a second early. I feel like any other show would show him, like, jumping completely off the table. He, like, gets up, it's like a half a beat, and then it cuts. And it's a really weird, jarring... off-kilter edit, which is news radio, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? I mean, that's the thing with watching this. What doesn't work is too funny. I don't know. Like, everything, it's so good.
Bill's story, I alluded to this earlier, Bill's story is a little confusing because it's funny. Of course it's funny. It's well-written and Phil Hartman is so funny. But Bill's story is that, like, he's falling so... stupidly for something that is so obviously untrue, but then that just gets to the heart of maybe if Bill McNeil had been a different performer all along, this character wouldn't work as well, but Phil Hartman makes it work, that his arrogance knows no bounds.
Yeah.
Like his arrogance is so great that it's capable of making him so stupid. I mean,
falling in love with an 80-something-year-old woman who turns out to not be.
Well, the fact that he believes when the psychic transparently says to him, oh yeah, guess what, you're gonna live to be 282, and he still believes that. But that's you know, like, if this show were on the air today and Bill McNeil were still alive within the show, if Phil Hartman were still alive, you know, Bill McNeil would be a Trump voter. Like, that's the, because he's a contrarian, because he believes things. And, like, the fact that he believes things, and he hates women, and he would be the guy who's like, no, cold jobs are going to come back. And he would absolutely go along with that. Meanwhile, Dave and Lisa would be Hillary supporters.
Yeah.
And that would be, like, the whole conflict of an episode. Jimmy James would be asking for voting advice.
Well, Jimmy James would be running, probably.
Again. Yeah. Yeah. As he did in this season.
Yes. Is there anything else about this? I mean, like... The thing is, like, rewatching this, I've seen it so many times, I still laugh out loud. It's unusual how much this show makes me laugh out loud, I think, compared to most other shows. I think, like, the jokes are so, they're so unusual in particular, and, like, specifically, when the psychic is reading Matthew, like, oh, you gotta do it, she's so real.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, oh, you have
to. Oh, you're a cat person, aren't you?
Such a cat person.
You see?
You have two cats.
Yes, I do.
And their names are, they're cute, silly names.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's
way off. Nan's would shoot you in mitt. Nice try, though.
That's so weird.
Yeah, and he's so upset. He's so like, no, this reading is over.
Yeah, that's another thing I noticed, is I think that if you just read the script of this, it isn't as funny. It's still funny. There's some really good jokes. But this is such a performer show, because it's a lot of the way they all deliver their lines in such specific cadences and affectations, body language, facial expressions. It's all, because Stephen, like Jimmy James's whole thing is inner, like his physicality and like the way that he says lines that if anyone else said those lines, they said them straight. Mm-hmm. That's not funny. But the way that like Beth can turn a line of like, I just got approved for a credit card and like nail like all the gravitas and the weight of like, oh my God. And like the way her whole body goes into it.
Mm-hmm. But as it should be, you know, like any kind of show, it starts with the writing and then the performers have to come and find the characters and then shape the characters. And then once that, you know, once they find their legs, then the writers maybe start writing for those characters as they have been created by the actors. And you can play this kind of head game with, like, think about other shows and if they had been cast differently. Like, imagine if Cheers had been cast differently, it could have not worked. I mean, these things are very...
It's all like a puzzle box. It's all a...
And every once in a while you see a show or a movie where you kind of, like, sense that, like, oh, this could have been really great if two or three different choices had been made here. You know, like, if this had been... Like for example, like, when they shot... When, you know, they were doing Back to the Future with Eric Stoltz.
Yes.
And they shot for 5 weeks, and then they were like, this just isn't working, and they replaced him. And
Michael J. Fox working nights. You can hear all about this actually on our Family Ties episode with Ari Scott.
Yes, yeah. And it's incredible that, like, first of all, that they had the you know, like the gall, the stones to be like, we're just gonna throw out five weeks of
worth
production.
Of, like, half of every scene probably for doing coverage. Mm-hmm.
Like the bravery to be like, yeah, we should absolutely completely start over. And also fire poor Eric Stoltz, who I'm sure was doing a perfectly fine job. It just wasn't
different movie,
gelling.
Different tone.
Yeah.
And you get Michael J. Fox. And like,
Yeah, and then it's so perfect.
History.
Imagine if they had finished that movie with Eric Stoltz, it probably would have come and gone.
Yeah.
Would have been forgotten.
Well, it's even true with News Radio, where, like, I mean, Ray Romano was originally in Joe's role. And they did table reads for the pilot. And it's like, Ray Romano is, his whole thing is being, like, low energy. It's a funny low energy. Everybody Loves Raymond is a good show, but he's not. Joe is. He can talk as fast as everyone else, and has also a very quick aggressive. He's a quick aggressive performer.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the best performer. I mean, but you get him because he like brings this like intensity.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many plot points that hinge on you believing that Joe Garelli and Joe Rogan can beat someone up. And on a sitcom, it is very rare to find the sitcom actor that you think, yeah, they could fuck someone up. And Joe Rogan can, like, the awards episode, which I think is a couple episodes after this, where he, like, gets into a fight with Bob Costas. And the joke of that is Bob Costas, like, flips him. Because, like, Joe Rogan, like, takes off his jacket and wears, like, a sleeveless tuxedo shirt and, like, cuffs. Great.
And yet he's also, like, a conspiracy nut and a nerd and a big Star Wars nerd.
Yeah, that's the other, like, crazy thing is his whole conspiracy thing. I watched that Alien Autopsy thing. Like, I was all on board for that in 1996. I loved all that. All that, like, mid to late 90s alien conspiracy. I watched Strange Universe in syndication every day during the summers. It came on in the afternoon. And it was hosted by a Chopra, I think. Like, the son of Deepak Chopra?
Really?
I think. And it was all about, like, ghosts and aliens and shit, and I loved it. I think it was called Strange Universe. I'm not sure. Anyway, we can get some trivia section.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Trivia realness.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, so this is a 90s show, so I can go deep into the ratings. I, like, found out all sorts of shit about the ratings. So 12.1 million people watched this specific episode.
Wow.
Which is a lot. Like, that's a huge hit today.
Uh-huh.
It was second for its time slot, which was Wednesdays at 9 at this point, because news radio was all over the place.
Oh, yeah,
its time
that's
slots.
Right.
This was its Wednesday night. It was second in its time slot after Grace Under Fire.
Wow.
So, timestamp.
Oof.
It actually beat Party of Five and Star Trek Voyager in the ratings. But those were Fox and UPN, which were always, like, at that time, were pretty much always, like, lower rated.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised it beat Voyager, I guess.
No. Yeah, well, that's
a niche. A sitcom, a very funny sitcom on the big three networks.
Yeah.
More than a Star Trek show on a additional network.
Yeah,
additional.
That not even everyone probably had.
Yeah.
I mean, for a long time, I had to watch the WB on WGN.
Because,
like, we had WGN, and it just carried... does WGN still exist? Yeah, because they just did that... they did Underground, right? And they did that, like, atomic bomb testing drama.
Oh, I mean, isn't this a local station, right?
WGN is like a local Chicago station, but it became like, it was a national cable channel or something. Mm. And they got into prestige dramas because I would see them on Subway ads, like the Subway ads in New York for...
Really?
I think it was WGN. I don't...
You're blowing my mind.
I know, and now, because now I'm thinking, I have not seen WGN in a decade or more. And I was like, but that
I mean,
was...
I always thought it was something local like WPIX or whatever, which is a New York, which is a New York thing. But that was like a local NBC affiliate or whatever it was.
I mean, WGN is a Chicago, it was a Chicago local channel that I had in Tennessee. Because it was like, it was just, and it was a over-the-air station because it was the WB, like, at like 7 p.m. Central Time, it would switch over to the WB. And that's how I watched Buffy for a couple years before we got a dedicated WB station.
Mm-hmm.
Weird shit.
That's how I used to watch Fox when Simpsons first
debuted.
Oh, really?
What did it used to be?
Well, in Puerto Rico, it was like airtime. It was sharing airtime with some local like cable access station. And then the cable access channel folded, went out of business, and then there was no more Fox in Puerto Rico.
Holy shit.
And I was hooked on The Simpsons by then, and I had to miss from like season 2 to season 4.
Jeez. Yep. Those are good seasons.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah. So for Wednesday night on the whole, while it was only second in the time slot, it was seventh that night. The Drew Carey Show was number one that night, and it had 20.2 million viewers.
Of course.
So Drew Carey Show
was a big hit.
Was a huge hit.
Mm.
So for the week, for the whole week, this episode of News Radio was number 52 for the week.
Wow.
Which is pretty bad.
Do you remember what the Wednesday night lineup was? Like what it came
on NBC.
After
oh, I should have written that down.
I have no recollection.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was for that night. Hold on. If I still have it in my trash pile, I can look it up. Nope, I don't.
Ugh,
I
never should have brought this up.
Guys, look it up yourselves. for the week, the top five shows that week. So News Radio was 52. Number five was Friends. Number four was Suddenly Susan.
Ugh.
Surprising. Three was Home Improvement. Two was Seinfeld. One was ER. So that is the must-see TV lineup, basically, and Home Improvement.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the glory days were. Oh, don't let them pass you by. I've
done
that twice now.
You know, we're kind of there again, except it's spread out everywhere.
Yeah, it's like watching on Hulu.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like watching Difficult People on Hulu, followed by Master of None on Netflix, and then I go watch Great News on NBC proper.
Yeah, you could still watch A Good Place on NBC.
Yeah, which I did last night.
I haven't seen this one yet. New
good
season.
Stuff.
Yeah. I love that show.
So it's...
Everybody watch A Good Place.
Yes, please keep it around for many years, because they can burn through plot.
Yeah.
You'll get 100 episodes worth of plot in one episode, and that's great.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, is like NBC actually toyed around with the idea of doing must-see TV again this year, because they're bringing Will and Grace back. They're having a back-to-back comedy night on Thursdays of, I think it's Good Place, Great News, Will and Grace, and Superstore. And they were gonna, like, brand it must-see TV and relaunch it and stuff, but then they bailed on that.
Sometimes I just think, you know, imagine if Seinfeld's still on TV with all new modern episodes.
Oh, yeah. Wait, was that, Thirty Rock did that joke?
No, that's Seinfeld 2000 on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Big running gag.
There's a 30 Rock joke where they were going to, like, re-edit new Seinfeld episodes from old ones.
Oh,
and,
God.
And start airing those with, like, CG and shit.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. So, on IMDb, 93 users rated this episode an 8.1. Would you go higher or lower?
I think that's about right. You know, when I think of some of my favorite news radio episodes, they're, like, nines and tens, and they're wall-to-wall. And this episode has a lot of big laughs and all of that. So, yeah, it's a solid 8-something.
Consistently big laughs.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't drag. It has a good... It moves at a good clip. A news radio episode always is going to move really quickly. There isn't as much, back and forth and all the plots fighting for attention. It's kind of a... It is more of a one act in a way.
I was going to say it's almost like a bottle episode, but then almost all episodes are like bottle episodes because they hardly ever leave the radio station.
There is one moment where it's when Candy Alexander's character is Catherine. I blanked on her name. When Catherine and Beth like drag Bill back into the thing to talk. As soon as they leave, Dave and Lisa then run in and we follow them, which is one of the only examples of the classic, like, news radio frantic running around pace in this episode.
Yeah.
I would say 8.1. I would go 8.2. I don't know.
there are, for me, this is a good plot overall. As far as standalone moments, this doesn't really have any standalone moments except for the image of Dave being Kids in the Hall Dave and dressing as a woman. Whereas some episodes are like... There are individual scenes and gags in other episodes that are lifelong tattooed in my brain, like the editing the baseball promo bit from that episode. That is priceless. And I'm blanking on the other one I was going to give as an example. I guess it's not that indelible after all.
Yeah, fuck it. No. Well, I always think of Matthew as...
Oh, wait, how could I forget? This episode has one of the best moments of all time. Maestro, if you please,
yes!
Rump Shaker, or some reasonable facsimile.
Bill doing the cabbage patch in Revolutionary War garb. Also, this is also one reason why it's so hot, is because, men in uniforms, hot. Just almost in general, like, hot. So Revolutionary War, hot. But fucking powdered wigs, not hot.
That's
like,
right.
Literally at all. And he
omitted that.
So it's weird because it's like Bill McNeil is like, well, I'm going to wear a costume, but I'm not going to go that far.
Yeah. Like, he's still the cool kids, of course.
Yeah, because it would further his point about being old.
That's
and
true.
Like, because I feel like he's wearing the Revolutionary War costume because like time, like he's old. He's like, so like, yeah, you should wear a powdered wig. That would prove his point even more. Like, I belong with this old lady. No, he's just like, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And so therefore he just looks very, very...
And he's handsome. Still very vain.
God, yeah. It's also, I think I went through all the different Bill hairstyles in the last news radio. This is like primo Bill because it's like side part glasses.
You know what?
Good Bill.
Earlier I was theorizing that he dresses as a Revolutionary War officer because maybe Alexander Hamilton died famously in a duel at a young age. Maybe he's just joking about like being a Revolutionary War officer would make him like 200 years old. Maybe that's just a joke.
Oh, wait, and well, that's also a good call forward, right? Like, to the reveal.
Well, just the, true. But just the idea that he feels like he's an old person and
death
is imminent. And
so
he's terminal now.
Who would you say had the must-see performance in this episode?
I mean, well, strong runner-up is Jimmy James always. Stephen Root is so wonderful.
Yeah.
Also Phil Hartman, but in this episode I have to go with Dave Foley, and yeah. He doesn't even have to work that hard. He just looks so good.
Doing his normal thing.
Yeah, and when he tries to run in heels.
That is really good.
He casts a self-conscious glance around.
Yeah.
Some people are there, they're gonna see him.
He sort of
gasps, you know, he sort of sighs. He's just like, ugh, and then he just runs in heels.
Saunter runs. It's really good. Yeah.
Priceless.
I want to give it to Bill, and I was gonna give it to Bill, but I think the fact that I've talked so much about him is enough. I will give it to Dave. Yeah, because he really does. Like, this is really his episode. His episode to lose, and he doesn't lose it. He's really good at being the straight man and also the unusual thing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very hard line to follow.
Sure. Like when he has that whole line where he's talking to the man in the bear costume, or the person in the bear costume.
Yeah.
And he's like, they're just having a conversation, and he's just like, oh yeah, Vice President. Or well, he's like talking about Senator Dole.
Senator Dole, blah blah blah.
And I'm like, beat. Now, if you would please just get your hand off my ass, your paw. Yeah.
It's very hard to be a straight man and also deliver solid jokes.
Yeah.
Because people mistakenly think the straight man doesn't give jokes. A straight man is sort of poo-poo things and stop the action and, like, be the fuddy-duddy. But you have, like, your great straight men like Bob Newhart, like mm-hmm. Dave Foley, who can, like, wring jokes out of being the grounding force amidst the crazies. Mm-hmm. It's great. Must other people see this episode?
Well, I'm such a news radio partisan. I say yes. I say people have to watch all of news radio.
Obviously.
But if you're just going to watch a few episodes, yeah, this is a really strong one.
I think this gives you what I love about this episode, which I think it is a must-see episode. And I think that if you're going to watch a news radio episode, this is a good one to watch. Because I think that it's, while it is very Dave, Bill, Lisa heavy, there are enough really solid moments of the entire ensemble, like that break room scene. And the entire, mm-hmm. like, dorks, dorks, dorks. And then the cool table scene at the party that really capture the fun vibe of... Arcade, the other episode we talked about, Joe and Matthew aren't really in it that much. And they don't really have much to do. And Beth either.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they are in this episode more, and it does have more of an ensemble vibe, while still being heavy about certain characters, makes me want to recommend it. And I do.
Arcade more than this one, or
I recommend this one more than Arcade.
Oh yeah.
If you want to get a sense of the ensemble nature of the show, this one is much more of an ensemble episode than Arcade, totally. Definitely.
But then there are episodes like, for example, that one when Jimmy James goes fishing and he leaves behind that radio box of himself or whatever.
Yeah,
that might be my all time favorite episode.
Great.
I'm not sure. I do have to do a rewatch of everything soon.
Yeah,
maybe I'll finally watch those John Lovitz episodes.
You should.
I just don't really care much for John Lovitz these days.
No, I mean, also, they never settled on what his character was, which mm-hmm. is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
He's just too whatever the scene needs him to be. And I think one of his big games is just being a liar. And it's like, well, that isn't a funny game, because there has to be a basis of truth that you can then contrast off of.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to justify the lying. It's a thing.
Also, John Lovitz was in the show before that.
Twice.
Yeah.
In two other episodes. And it would have been better if they had made him maybe one of those characters come back.
Yeah.
Because that would have given him more of a concrete character to play. But yeah, that is it for the first episode of the Holiday Gauntlet, talking about Halloween. We both survived the experience.
The funk of 40,000 years.
Where can people find you on the internet if they want to talk to you about Halloween and or news radio?
I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is AlejandroBot. That is Alejandro with the letters B-O-T just added at the end. A little lovely robot portmanteau. And that's about it. I'm not on most other social media at all anymore. So.
Yeah, well, that's the one that matters.
For me.
The one. Yeah, that's where you get your digs in, right?
that's the one where I live,
kicks.
Yeah.
Get your kicks.
Yeah, but I invite everyone to look for me there, because I love it very much.
Hooray! And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest, Alejandro Arbona, for dropping by and running the Holiday Gauntlet with me this week and talking about news radio. Next week, this Halloween celebration continues. I will be discussing the Addams Family episode, Halloween with the Addams Family.
Halloween with the Addams Family is in season 1. It is episode 7 of that awesome show, and you can stream the Addams Family on Hulu, or you can buy the episode on Amazon or iTunes. One more reminder, if you would like to donate to relief efforts in Puerto Rico, please check out Alejandro Bot on Twitter. His pinned tweet has links to all sorts of charities that you can donate to that will also be retweeted on the Must Have Seen TV Twitter page at Must Have Seen TV. So that's at Alejandro Bot and at Must Have Seen TV. Until then, you can send in questions about these sitcoms that we watch on the show or any sitcoms we've never talked about on the show to musthaveseentv@gmail.com. You can follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at musthaveseentv. If you like what you've heard, I beg and plead with you to rate and review the show on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. You can read the words that I write at decider.com. You can also check out my sitcom t-shirts and stickers at tpublic.com/user/Brett White. Today's special spooky theme song is A Stroll Through Hive Manor Corridors by The Hives. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to all y'all for listening, and I will see y'all next week on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.